Let's go ahead and do a check-in, and I'm going to start with Rachel, if you're willing. And let's just do, like, kind of our usual thing, which is a little bit word or phrase or just a little bit about how you're showing up today. So can be reflective of how it's going in general or how just today is going specifically. And then one teaching success, one thing that you feel like is really going well, and one current teaching challenge.
Okay. I'd say one word sort of describing me right now is transitioning. Just coming off of summer and a lot of travel, and I haven't been teaching a lot this month. But my son back in school, my husband starting a new job, life is getting back into a routine and some normalcy, so I have that coming up. I'm delaying a little bit today by being lazy, but I think that's okay. A teaching, a winning moment. I actually talked to some friends on vacation. I had a girls' weekend and talked to my, you know, oldest and dearest friend, and it was great. It'd be wonderful too, because they're both ex-dancers, so it was easy to teach them. But I got such great feedback from them, and I just felt really grateful to have that exchange and that feedback, you know, from the people who I love and really value their opinion. I think my current teaching challenge is just one that is continuing with my group classes, you know, working with people that have challenges. I know I shared with you, Chantel, I have somebody with diastasis that comes to my class regularly. I have another person not supposed to be flexing the spine either, who has spinal fusion and spinal injury, and just, you know, finding ways to keep everybody working at a certain level and keep them safe and keep everybody challenged is what I'm working with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. All right, very good. Thank you, Rachel. How about you, Trinity?
Mm-hmm. I'm showing up today a little sleep deprived and a lot busy. I'm teaching so much. New students just keep coming out of the woodwork. I think maybe I'm to the point where I'm going to have to say that I don't have any more space. I can't accept any new students until
awesome.
Other people move around. So that's an interesting place to be. And that teaching success is, I guess, just lately I've been reintroducing some stuff that I taught lots and lots, and then I got away from it, and then I brought it back in, and that feels good. It feels good to teach it. So my students are responding well to it. And then a teaching struggle just today, aside from teaching more than maybe I should be at the moment, just today I finished an intro package with a gentleman, and I kind of left from the experience with the feeling of, I wish I knew better how to work with men. I wish I had some sort of solid approach to that somehow, because he's got some shoulder issues, and I want to see a certain amount of stability in his shoulders and in his pelvis as well before I get him into the, you know, bigger, badder stuff that's going to make him feel whatever, good, like he worked really hard. And I, were they anterior hip replacements or posterior hip replacements? You know, I'm not sure. Maybe ask her if they went in, you know, through the back or through the front.
Okay.
It seems to me like they're moving more towards hip replacements, you know, coming in anteriorly. And then if you would, Bonnie, now that we have Chantel back on the line, are you here, Chantel?
I am, as long as you can hear me, okay.
Yes. Bonnie, maybe just tell Chantel what you just told us about your challenge, your woman with the hip replacement, so she can hear it as well. Okay. I have a lady that had a hip replacement on one leg 1 year ago, and on the other leg 5 years ago. She's very active, very strong, but not strong in her legs. And I'm just not sure when I look at her body if I'm going to see a different look of a leg settling into the hip bone, different from someone who hasn't had a hip replacement. You know, if the thigh bone is going to look differently.
I don't think the thigh bone is going to look different. I think Trinity's right from what I could hear when I popped back on. It's you're going to get a lot of information, or at least it's going to be provide a clearer starting place if you find out how the hip replacement was done.
Okay.
And I think they used to come in from the back and side, which is why, like, medial movement and internal rotation was contraindicated for hip replacements. But with the anterior insertion point now, a lot of that is different. But with that information, you might be able to deduce more fully what to look for. And in my experience, it's going to look like an aversion to medial glide and internal rotation. So it's often going to be a weakness in the medial glutes and the glutes in general and the hamstrings, because it relates to gait, to walking. And when the back phase of gait, so the back leg, when we push off the back leg, that back leg, the femur should spiral internally, which triggers the medial glutes, the hamstrings, and the adductors. And so my experience has been like an atrophying or a weakness or a lack of resilience or suppleness, that's the word I'm looking for, in those tissues. And sometimes that might look like the leg is actually lying differently. But more so for me, it's always much more apparent in the, you know, when I'm watching them move or I can assess their strength level. Does that help?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you for reiterating that. And, you know, maybe that's something we can also talk a little bit about on the mentoring forum, if you would like to post it. And see what other information comes up, and I can post some resources.
Okay, and then I think we still have Darlene to check in as well.
Okay, great. If you're all done, Bonnie.
Yes, I am.
Okay, excellent. So, Darlene, whenever you're ready. Darlene, are you there? Okay, if you're there, we can't hear you. In which case...
Can you hear me now?
Oh, there you are.
Sorry, I had hit my mute button. I thought I unhit it.
Oh, sure.
So, I'm feeling a little scattered here, and I'm trying to think of the positive things that have been happening. There's some refinement happening when I'm working one-on-one with people, and I feel like I see some really nice progress in some of my students. The challenging thing that's been going on is I've been moving into teaching group reformer classes, and I'm feeling just not very confident. But that's, you know, I was just speaking with Chantel about all this, and, you know, that all is part of the gift to learning more. So it's all, you know, it's all positive in its own way. I guess that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah. yeah. Thank you, Darlene. So thank you, everybody, for being on the call and taking the time. I left it really open today, just to kind of see what comes up. And we've got a mentoring workshop coming up in a couple of weeks, September 12th, Saturday from 10 to 4. And it's going to be at Mindful Movement Pilates Studio in Santa Rosa. And I'll post the, address and the topics again. So some of the things, I know Bonnie asked some questions about vertigo, which I started to kind of, contemplate a little bit more. And so we can definitely, talk about that a little bit. And Darlene brought up a question about starting classes, how to start classes, warming the bodies up, warming your folks up. But also, you know, feeling like you're not just, she didn't use these words. So just to be clear, these are mine. Wasting time, you know, like doing whatever, stretching and slow stuff and breathing. And, you know, with when we sometimes have this hovering expectation of ourselves and this projected expectation from our students that, you know, they have paid for a service, they want to get to it, they want to move a lot. And if we take too much time or we move too slowly, then perhaps we're not giving them what they want. So those are the two things that are on my mind right this very second. Does anybody else have anything that they'd like to discuss? Questions or anything in the moment?
Chantel, this is Trinity.
Yeah.
I don't know if you caught the all of what I had said when I checked in, but I just have a little... question about maybe some specific ideas for exercises for men.
Oh, yes, right.
To give them a little bit of the wow factor. Because it's tricky with them, I feel, because I want to see the stability that I want to see and the connections I want to see before I move them on to the juicier stuff. And then, like, I'm worried that I'm going to lose them before that, like, lose their interest, lose their focus. So that's my only question. If we get to it, then great.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yes. Yeah, I think we can. And maybe you can, do me the service of keeping me on track with that. If I, you know, go off on a tangent or something, you can help bring me back.
Sure. This is Rachel. I have a little something to add on.
Yeah, sure.
The client that I was talking about has diastasis.
Yeah.
And I noticed some of the men that I work with not modify on their own. Like, I have to really watch them more than some of my female clients. I mean, this is just a generality I'm making, but that, you know, I'd love to get a little bit more information on working with men as well.
Okay. Great. Okay. Yeah, I think we can probably go in that direction. Let's start with the vertigo situation. Bonnie, do you have a specific example? Like, could you give us a little mini case study or overview if you have a client that you're currently working with vertigo?
Yes, I do. And what I try to do with her is if I've got her on the reformer, lying on her back, I just try to keep her there for as long as possible. I don't have to keep bringing her up and down and up and down. So do everything that needs to be done on the back, then get her seated, do everything there. But I was just wondering if there was any specific, maybe more release work that would help them, you know, combat some of that vertigo, or if there's something, a specific exercise that might be good for that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think in general, you know, if we talk about it from a safety perspective, it sounds like you're doing what you should do, which is to minimize the up and down. You know, people with vertigo often can't close their eyes. And so just to be thoughtful about not requiring them to do that, they often need their head elevated so they can't be perfectly flat. And or even like significantly elevated as in, you know, like something you would do with a pregnant woman and, you know, doing footwork on the baby arc or something like that. So I find that, you know, vertigo, span, you know, it has a wide range in terms of how it's affecting people, but that's just from working with people with vertigo. Those are the things that I've kind of come to realize. And so, you know, positionally, keeping them steady, elevating them, keeping their eyes open. A lot of what I have read in the past about vertigo is tells me that it's helpful to kind of retrain their brain as to, you know, their balancing mechanisms. And so there is a method that you could look up called Brandt, B-R-A-N-D-T, Darhoff, D-A-R, Daroff, I think it's D-A-R-O-F-F, and some very simple exercises that you could do.
Say that again, Chantel. You just cut out as soon as we heard the method.
Yeah, Brandt, Daroff. Can you hear me? Did you hear that?
I didn't totally catch
it. It's, I'm going to spell it, and let's see if we can get it. Brandt, B-R-A-N-D-T.
Okay.
Brandt, you got that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Daroff, D-A-R-O-F-F.
Okay.
So you can check that out. Some simple exercises. The one I know of, the one that I have used, is from a seated position. You have your student, and they're going to experience dizziness, and they might feel a little yucky, but that's okay. From a seated position, you have them roll onto their side. So the knees kind of come up into the body. They roll onto their side and turn the head 45 degrees upward to the ceiling. So not all the way to the ceiling, but 45, right? Halfway between the floor and the ceiling. And they're looking in that direction, and they hold that posture for 30 seconds. And then they come back up to sitting. And then you rest for 30 seconds. And then you roll onto your other side and turn your head 45 degrees toward the ceiling. Eyes open. And you hold for 30 seconds. Then you come back up to sitting and hold for 30 seconds. And I usually do that like 3 times. So I do repeat both sides, you know, right, left, and then right, left, and then right, left again. So that's just one of these things that's been kind of proven to aid in, I'll use the word, rehabilitating vertigo. The other things, which I was actually just discovered this, but makes me kind of excited because it's very much in line with, I don't know who's heard of, who knows of Z Health, which is a company that was created by Dr. Eric Cobb. Dr. Cobb has this really, really super cool training system for the eyes. And it's designed to really improve the brain, right? Not the eyes themselves, but the vestibular system itself. So that part of the brain, you know, that where we get vision. But it also, what's very cool is that it also addresses weaknesses in the 6 ocular nerves or ocular muscles. So, when I found some of these eye exercises for vertigo, I immediately thought of Dr. Cobb, and I feel like his work would be, beneficial here, not only for the vertigo, but for, we don't have time to get into it now, but some of the implications of strengthening the ocular muscles and what that does to different quadrants of the body is very, very cool. We'll have to keep it on the list of things to explore at some point. But the vertigo exercises that I know of there are 2 of them, and you do it from a seated position. And the first thing is you want to hold the head totally still. So what I do, like when I do the Cobb exercises, is I actually put a finger on my chin or my forehead to make sure that my head stays perfectly still. And like 10 times you look up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down. And then you do it sideways, right to left, 10 times. And I like to kind of stretch the eyes. So I look as far to one side as I can. I get a little motion sick, so that actually kind of upsets my stomach, but it's good for your eyes, your muscles, and your brain, so I do it anyway. So 10 times up and down, 10 times right to left, and then go on the diagonals from upper right to lower left, and then upper left to lower right, up and down on that diagonal, 10 times on each. And then you do the opposite, which is you hold your eyes still, so you can put your finger out in front of you and focus your eyes on your finger. And then you do the same thing moving your head. You turn your head right to left without ever losing sight of your finger. I'm doing it now as I talk to you. And then look, move your head up and down. Oh, it hurt my neck. As far as you can. That's what I get for doing it in the car. Up and down as far as you can. Then you do the diagonals. So the first one is move your eyes, hold your head completely still. The second one is hold your eyes still and move your head. So those are the things that you could introduce to your student, Bonnie. And then you could, we were just talking about this, you could provide them a choice and tell them to pick one thing, just one, right, to do every single day. And so, you know, you don't have to lead them through it. Let me think about the Cobb exercises are kind of similar, but one of the things that he does is a focusing exercise where you, converge and what's the diverge the eyes. And so you take a pin, you could use your finger and you follow it out as far as you can. And then you bring it in as close to your nose as you can. So that's convergence and divergence of your eyes, right? Coming together and pulling apart. That's a great exercise that I am imagining does the exact same thing as the other eye exercises. The other thing he does is with the pencil or your finger, again, not moving your head. So this is very specifically to... what it also does is strengthens your ocular muscles. And there's been some research, which I'm not entirely sure what it is, but according to Cobb, and in my own physical experience, I have experienced this very directly. There is a link between the weakness in the ocular muscles and weakness or pain in the body. And so... here's something you could play with, and I'm not sure, I'm just going to give it to you and then you can decide how it might, play into the vertigo thing or not. If somebody is experiencing pain, let's say, and what I will also say would maybe be interesting is if somebody's just experiencing a lack of range somewhere in their body, let's say a lack of range of movement in the spine through flexion, is you test the ocular muscles. So you start, head is totally still. You take a pen or a pencil or your finger and you, you have to test one quadrant at a time. So you would test straight up and down. And then, so you would assess range of motion. Then you would do the eyes. So following a pin up as high as you could and holding it for 10 seconds and following it back down, following a pin down and holding it for 10 seconds and then coming back up. And you do that three times and then you retest the movement. So you reassess range of motion, or you could be assessing for pain, right? So a reduction or sometimes an inflammation of pain, if you're in the wrong place in terms of the eyes. And then you want to keep testing and keep doing this eye movement in the different quadrants. So it'd be up and down, right to left. And in fact, I'm going to backtrack a little bit. It would be from the center up, center up, center up, retest, center down, center down, center down, retest, center right, retest, center left, or center upper right, center, upper left, center, lower right, center, lower left diagonals. And so it takes a little bit of time. Your folks have to be willing, but you know, if it's potentially going to help them reduce pain, increase range of motion, or reduce vertigo, I would say that most people will probably be into it. 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes. But ultimately, I've done it on my own self and I've done it on my students, is that you will find a quadrant where two things. You will find the one that improves the movement, reduces the pain, and you are likely to find the quadrant that increases the pain and decreases the range of motion. And so the goal would be, if you find a specific one that improves whatever you're trying to improve the most, that's the exercise you would give the student to do at home. So what I have found is there's a direct correlation with up and down to improving flexion and extension. So depending on what's going on with the body, the eyes traveling up and holding or traveling down and holding almost always improves flexion and extension. And so that's what I would tell my student. That's the one thing I would give them to practice. And they can do that on their own. Track up and hold for 10 seconds. Track back to the center. Track up and hold 10 seconds. You know, and they can do it like multiple times a day, pretty much anywhere except for driving, you know, or operating heavy machinery or anything crazy like that. But any questions about that, you guys?
That's just some great stuff. Thanks very much. And I'll look into the Dr. Cobb and the grant just to get some more information. But I appreciate those ideas.
Yeah.
I'll try them.
Yeah, good. The Dr. Cobb stuff is so cool. I learned a bunch of this stuff in a workshop I took with him at the PMA conference a few years ago. And I think that you'll find there's probably a very specific training program that he has that you could access. It's probably a video or something, or a DVD, or probably maybe a book, but probably not. Probably just video that you could purchase. Right, the work is, much of it is delineated in phases, and each phase addresses a different aspect of the body and of training the body. So I'm sure you'll find some good tools on there. Any other thoughts?
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thoughts or questions about that kind of stuff? No? All right. Have fun with it. It's very cool. It's very cool. Okay, so let's go to Darlene's question about preparing the body. So how to, you know, starting the body, starting the class, preparing the body for a, let's say, you know, rigorous movement experience. Darlene, do you want to say anything about that from your own point of view in terms of what you feel like is challenging? And then what I would love is if anybody wanted to jump in and offer some ideas or thoughts, about what they do or what they know to be effective or, you know, how they handle it. So Darlene, do you want to preface this with anything?
Let's see, I'm not sure what to ask or to add to it with what you said. I feel like sometimes the movements are subtle that I'm trying to encourage. And so maybe there's just some ideas about what would be prime areas to warm up and how that would be done. So one of the things I'll do is the pelvic clock. And I always feel like that's a tough one for people to get. And I did notice, I did experience someone doing it with sitting on a ball, and I thought that was pretty effective. So I'm thinking of trying that, but that means getting the balls out, putting them back, and quite honestly, I just felt like, I don't know if that's just too much time. You know, it takes like, you know, a few minutes to get reorganized with balls, I feel like. So, I don't know. That's just why I have a big thing about wasting time. I'm always worried about using too much time up for the warm up. I don't know. It's just this problem I have.
Yeah.
So, so I guess I want to be able to help people, you know, warm their bodies up. And of course I do, you know, cat-cow and retracting and protracting the shoulders. And I feel like that's a tough one for people to understand how to do properly too. Like, as much as I say, you know, how different ways to articulate that, some people seem to get it and some people are bending their elbows a lot and not really getting it. So those are just some of the things I was thinking about. Opposite arm leg, you know, I do those basic kind of warm-ups. But if anybody has other ideas, I'd love to hear it.
Anybody want to jump into this?
Hi, this is Kimberly.
Oh, hi, Kimberly.
Hi. I've been listening in silence.
Oh, great.
It's going to be a little different for me because I'm just doing that right now. But one of the things that I do is because I deal with a lot of desk jockeys. So I have people do like 5 roll downs throughout get started. And that's kind of like it gets them all centered. They can talk to me about crazy stuff during the week. But then getting that stretch in the hamstrings and the lower back, and that seems to work. And I've learned to reverse the order and not putting the roll-up so early, because for some people the roll-up is it's an intense exercise. So I'll do the roll-up after I've done, like, leg fall-out or a couple of other just some things like that to kind of make that, like, the 4th or 5th exercise as opposed to the 2nd or 3rd.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, is it okay? I don't know if it's appropriate to interject, but yeah,
go ahead.
The whole rolling down, I almost don't even want to teach it anymore because I just feel like people get so frustrated with it, unless we have a strap and they can put their feet in the strap, which I know is kind of cheating, but it just seems like people get so stuck on it.
Yeah. Well, I think this goes directly to the point of preparing the body more appropriately so that exercise is not, you don't have to cheat as much, or it's not really about cheating, but giving the body an opportunity to progress, which I think the strap can be used either way, right? It could be used as a crutch, or it can be
mm-hmm.
used as an effective
mm-hmm.
tool for helping to teach them how to articulate their spine. So that's totally up to you. Okay, anybody else have some thoughts about what's your intention? Like, what do you keep in mind when you are warming up a class or a student, or like, what works for you? What's your motivation? That kind of thing.
This is Trinity. I have some quick input on this.
Yeah, go ahead.
Like scapula glides, protraction.
Yes.
What I do with that is, so I'm gonna look for, with most of my, a lot of my classes anyway, I'm going to look for a little scapula glide at the beginning of all my classes, but maybe I'm gonna just teach it from a different position. So standing with the arms in front of you, palms looking at each other, and, you know, stretch the shoulder blades wide, and then bring them back, and then sternum drop, if you're on all fours. You let the sternum drop through the shoulder blades, and then you lift the rib cage back up so above. And then, too, if you're not opposed to the foam roller, and I totally get it with the prop thing, right? Like, the whole thing has to be pulled out and then put back. You can teach scapular glides on your foam roller, get them to lay lengthwise, and then reach the fingertips towards the ceiling, and then squeeze the roller with your shoulder blades.
Mm-hmm.
Feels like they're not quite getting it, but keep switching it up and tell them this is the same that we do like this. It's the same that we do when we're in this position, that position, whatever it happens to be. And just keep working with them till they get that scap glide. And then, like Kimberly said, I am a big, big fan of roll down because it just warms the spine, stretches the hamstrings. And maybe there's,
you know, a long time ago, Chantel, this was something I got from Chantel, was start with side bending. Start your craft with side bending of some form or another. So, mermaid on the chair, or part of the 28-day course sequence is the one where you're arms to the ceiling and then take a hold of one of your wrists. And then you swap down a little tiny bit, and you basically tuck and curl. So you round forward and go all the way to the other side.